Hello and welcome. This is Erin Matlock from Brain Pages, the world's first brain-friendly directory and community. You can find us online at www.brainpages.net. Today is the first interview in our new brain-friendly expert series. I'd like to welcome Alex Doman to the call. He is the CEO of Advanced Brain Technologies, a neurotechnology company that develops and distributes interactive software and music-based programs for the improvement of memory, attention, listening, academic skills, sensory processing, brain health, peak performance, and more. You can find Alex and Advanced Brain Technologies at www.advancedbrain.com. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you, Erin. How are you today?
I am good. Thanks so much for being here on our first interview.
Thank you for having me.
About, I guess it may be several months ago, I'm almost embarrassed to say, I sent you a list of questions that came from my subscribers to my newsletter at Brain Training 101. And they asked, they sent me off some questions for you. And due to many things, one of them being a new addition to your family and a new addition to my family, which would be a website over here and a baby for you.
Yes.
we are now finally getting to this. So first, congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. We're these 9 months now. We're just having a great time with our Brendan.
That's awesome. I'm so happy for you guys. I am. I'm not there yet. My websites are my babies. So I look to you, and I will learn from you and Mandy.
Happy to share. Happy to share.
Thanks. So I'm going to start off with our first question, and it involves brain plasticity. And basically, our viewers or my readers want to know, what is it, and what can it do for them, and how do they get it?
Oh, excellent question. Brain plasticity essentially refers to the ability of the human brain to change as a result of our experiences. So way to think about it is essentially as we are learning, the brain is making physical structural changes in response to the input that it's receiving. And it's what it's learning through all of the senses, whether it's auditory, visual, tactile inputs. They're all influencing the actual structure, organization, and growth of the brain. You know, there was a long-held belief that the brain was somewhat fixed in terms of its potential. And we've known for quite some time that that is absolutely not the case. There is an unlimited potential for the brain to learn and to grow. And that growth happens through stimulation of input across neural pathways, strengthening those pathways, actually pruning connections, which are called synapses, and reinforcing the connections that we have. And the more that we have certain experiences, the stronger those connections become. One book that I would highly suggest for your readers would be a book called The Brain That Changes Itself by Dr. Norman Deutsch, who talks specifically about brain plasticity and just what a marvel it is. And brain plasticity is actually the basis of all of the work that we do at Advanced Brain Technologies, which is plasticity-based training, doing specific cognitive training exercises at the appropriate frequency, intensity, and duration so the brain is interested in novel, engaging exercises that are good for its growth and development.
Okay, so with, I guess, a follow-up question to that is, if our brain can grow and adapt and be trained, then how can we deal with disorders such as ADHD? Is there something we can do to help with some of the symptoms?
Well, as we look at attentional disorders, learning challenges, issues with compulsions, obsessive compulsive disorder, there are absolutely things that can be done. So it is a matter of looking at what are the symptoms that are associated with that particular disorder, and then engaging in appropriate activities, again, at the right frequency, intensity, and duration that are going to address the underlying causes of those symptoms. So it is a matter of identifying what is specifically going to be right, not for that diagnosis, but for that individual that may have received that diagnosis. One area in particular with obsessive compulsive disorder, there's a Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz that has developed a plasticity-based treatment to help patients that are locked in their repetitive cycles and of obsessive compulsions to get it unstuck from these behaviors. And it is through a very specific regime of brain training that is done targeted to address those compulsions. So it must be very specific. It must be frequent. It must be delivered at the appropriate intensity or strength or appropriateness for a sufficient period of time for it to change. And I mention that because people, often engage in quote unquote brain training or brain healthy activities with a belief that it's going to make a change in the plasticity in the brain. And that's not always the case. The activities must be appropriate and they must be done for a sufficient period of time in order for them to actually make a change. So I think that's an important concept for your readers to consider.
So what would be, and I know this depends on the individual, but what's a typical time frame of treatment or training?
Well, there is no typical time frame. Okay. So that's yeah. The first answer, because it does depend on what the specific deficits are, how great they are, and a number of factors. We know that plasticity and growth and change in the brain is dependent, first of all, on a strong foundation. And that strong foundation is built on having an appropriate amount of sleep. Without sufficient sleep, it is during sleep that most plasticity takes place. So we must have sufficient sleep in order to integrate and consolidate the training that we've had within the day. So sleep is a very important factor. Good nutrition to make sure that the cells in the body and the brain are getting the nutrition that they need to function properly in order for plasticity to take place. So sleep, nutrition are important factors. Another very significant factor is stress. The less stressed we are, the more receptive we are to plasticity-based training. So stress plays an important role. So you can see that it's a fairly comprehensive perspective that we have to have with respect to targeting things like ADHD, OCD, or other disorders with respect to brain training. And I know I'm not giving you a specific answer, but that is because there is a kind of 50,000-foot view that you have to look at this from before you drill down to specifics. And those specifics are on an individual basis, not as much based on diagnosis.
So then in your opinion, because I think what I've been seeing over the past couple of years, and I'm sure what you've been seeing, there are a lot of programs and at-home software and brain training type offerings that are coming out. And I think that it's maybe important to look at it holistically and talk to, in your opinion, of having a professional give the training as opposed to maybe having that at home, or do you need to go under the guidance of a professional? I don't know if I'm making sense.
Well, I understand your question. We've been involved in both developing, and reviewing and clinically using, in clinic and at home brain training programs. I mean, that's in large part what we do.
Right.
And I think, first of all, this is a relatively new idea. the fact that we can do brain training and new idea meaning in popular culture. You know, my grandfather and great uncle started doing brain rehabilitation programs in the 40s for brain injured patients, stroke patients, and brain injured children. So we've been involved for 70 years as a family in taking these brain-based approaches to rehabilitation and optimizing the brains that we have. The idea of brain training software is a relatively new idea, and there are programs that are better than others, and some that are very specific in what they're targeting. But in terms of the professionals guiding it, you know, I think it is good to have a professional that is very versed in the software applications that they're using and very grounded in the claims that they're making and associated in association with those programs, to know what their limits are and not to reach too far in what their potential is in terms of what they can do. Because you know, the evidence behind these programs is growing, and some specific programs have research behind them that are backing their claims, but others are making very general claims you know, without good clinical data or scientific study to support them. So it's really teasing out what's the right program, what's a grounded program that's not trying to go too far in its claims. But I do need to say that I am a firm believer in home-based programs. With a home-based program, somebody can do their training in an environment where they're safe and comfortable. They don't have to pay professional service fees to be in clinic for treatment. And it's also more convenient, so the likelihood of compliance, if somebody has good discipline in a home-based program, can actually give better long-term outcomes for those that can engage in the discipline to do that. Others are going to need the structure of being in a clinical setting, and for them, then that's very appropriate to go to a clinic with a professional to receive their brain training and then maybe transition to a home-based program.
You know, that's a good point. In essence of full disclosure, Alex, gosh, probably a good couple of years ago, sent me a copy of their his Brain Builder at home software. And you do have to be, it fits my personality. I like to be on my own and to work on training, but you know what, you do have to have that discipline if you're going to work on an at-home program, because there is no one guiding you along and no one kind of forcing you. You don't have that that coach right there in front of you. Right. And it's work. It's not, I mean, it's fun for me and for my personality, but it is definitely, it works the brain.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, good. Let's go on. Here's the next question. What can we do to either stave off or prevent, if anything, Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia?
Boy, that's a popular question these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big one.
You know, neurodegenerative diseases and dementias, you know, are one of the fastest growing cognitive issues that, you know, that we're seeing, especially given the age of our population today. And with, you know, 74 million Americans that are baby boomers, many of which are, you know, looking at their parents that are, experiencing the very painful realities of dementia and seeing more earlier onset dementias in younger people. You know, this is a major health crisis that we have in America and internationally. So I'm really glad this question has been brought up. To date, there is no brain training program that can make a specific claim to delay Alzheimer's disease and dementias. So I need to make that opening statement. There are definitely possibilities to delay symptoms, but we don't yet know how to delay the disease itself. So this is obviously an area of great focus with many companies. It's not where we're focusing, but the neurosciences and other program developers are looking very carefully in these areas. So that's the first statement. This again goes back to a foundation of prevention. What are healthy brain practices that in theory could help delay some of these types of diseases. And if it's okay with you, Erin, I'd like to make another book recommendation.
Oh, absolutely.
If you'll allow me. There is a neurologist by the name of David Perlmutter, who I have a great respect for. He's one of the world's leading experts on prevention and treatment of neurodegenerative disease. He focuses on Parkinson's, Lou Gehrig's disease, and dementias such as Alzheimer's. He has a book that was published back in 2004, but is still very relevant today, called The Better Brain Book. And in it, he actually gives a self-assessment to look at where you are in terms of your cognitive health, and he divides it into three tiers. One tier, we're healthy. The second tier, we are at risk for neurodegenerative disease. And tier three, you're in neurodegenerative disease at some state. And then he gives very specific exercise, nutritional, dietary guidelines, but also does very extensive treatment at the Perlmutter Health Center down in Naples, Florida, which is where I refer friends and colleagues whose family members have been inflicted with any of these diseases. So I would caution, you know, your readers and listeners that brain training programs making claims for this right now are not backed by evidence. They certainly will do no harm, can only be of some help with the symptoms, but we don't yet know that any of these programs, including our own, are going to prevent or treat these diseases.
All right. So definitely not the answer any of us want, right? We all want a fix, and we want to help our loved ones who are suffering from this. And unfortunately, it's a complex issue, and it's so widespread. And I just have to hope that with the research coming in and all of the attention, like you mentioned, with the baby boomers that's going on currently, that just keep up the hope that we will have a better answer down the line.
You know, Erin, there is so much good energy and resources being put toward this that I have a very high degree of confidence in our lifetimes where we are going to see an answer.
I would love that. I know many of those who are listening would love that too. Now, another section over at Brain Pages, we have a large group of brain injury survivors, and they are interested in recovery options, specifically dealing with memory loss. What can they do to really rectify that situation? Because that's a difficult one.
You're giving me all the easy questions today.
Yeah, that's the name, my middle name.
You know, acquired and traumatic brain injury again is a very complex clinical picture to look at, and is so individual with respect to the type of injury, the how long post-injury is that individual, and what are their very specific symptoms. The standard process is you have a brain injury, you're admitted into the hospital, they work to get a patient to medical stability, and then once they're medically stable, some inpatient rehab program is generally initiated. There will be an evaluation by a physiatrist that is a rehabilitation physician, then a evaluation with physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, then a treatment program is generally organized in concert with these various professionals. Depending on the extent of the injury, that patient might be discharged to a long-term rehab facility, or with a less extent of an injury, and depending on their home situation, released to home, and they'll receive outpatient therapy, again, with the same disciplines generally treating. What The historically, the view is that whatever gains are made up to 2 years post-injury are all the gains that are going to be seen. And this again, has been a very traditional perspective. I and my colleagues have seen, years post-trauma, tremendous gains that could be made just through the miracle of the plasticity our brains have. So my first comment is, let's not have any preconceived notion of what's possible after brain injury, because miracles happen. But miracles happen based on opportunity and the very appropriate brain training opportunities. So with all of that said, specific to addressing memory, we go back to sleep, stress reduction, good nutrition, and exercise are all shown to be contributors to improved memory in those with brain damage. Now, the type of memories that are affected, we have different kinds of memory. We have our long-term memory, and then we have our short-term memory. And the short-term or working memory is that memory that we're utilizing to remember immediate tasks, to hold a conversation. It's the mental scratch pad. And that is what tends to be impacted the most. And there are brain training programs that work specifically on this. Our Brain Builder program, for example, is one that will do a baseline assessment of what the current working memory is in visual and auditory, then design a specific program which will be engaged in for 15 to 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week over the course of several weeks or months to rehabilitate that memory function. Now, in order for someone to engage in that, however, they must be able to operate a mouse and keyboard. They must be able to maintain attention for that 15 or 30 minutes with a computer. So depending on their motoric involvement, their gross and fine motor control, they may or not be able to engage in that. So we first of all have to determine, can they in fact use a computer program? And if they can use that computer program, can they maintain attention and engagement long enough to benefit from it? And then do they have a support structure that'll help coach and support them? Because with brain injury, we do find we need a stronger support structure than for many. So there are things that can be done, starting with the sleep, the stress reduction, the diet, the exercise, and then brain training programs such as ours and others can be beneficial in this area.
Great. I have a moderator over at Brain Pages who is working on the listening program, which is another of Alex's programs at Advanced Brain. And she is doing that for, I believe, for speech issues resulting from a brain injury. Can you talk a little bit about that and if it's appropriate or how that might help?
Well, the listening program is what's called a functional modified music program. Functional meaning that we're using music to address and improve specific neurological functions. It is classical music, which has been recorded, arranged, and modified in post-production processes to have very specific effects on how we perceive and integrate both auditory and vestibular information. Specifically in the case of brain injury, it can be useful as a general supportive stimulating program for the brain to help that listener to relax and to be able to engage in cognitive training, which again is a very important aspect to neurological rehabilitation. What we see with brain injured patients generally are improved attention, improved engagement, communication skills, and motivation that comes as a result. So we do recommend the listening program for brain injured patients. There has not been an extensive amount of research done in this area, But the clinical reports that come from the speech pathologists and occupational therapists and psychologists that are working with these programs with these patients are quite positive. We have more experience working with brain injured children. In fact, there are schools that will implement the use of the listening program as standard treatment protocol for their brain injured students. We're also starting to do some work with the military with injured soldiers that are coming back with traumatic brain injuries, actually doing a circuit training, combining the listening program and brain builder training as part of their rehabilitation program. So definitely appropriate and safe and worth exploring.
That's fantastic. And for those of you who are listening, again, just to mention, you can see all of this at www.advancedbrain.com. And that is Alex's company's website. So next question, I thought it was pretty interesting. Is there any way of stimulating our brain to make us more persevering or responsible?
Wow.
I know. I loved
you're
really,
you're,
it. I know.
Your visitors really have some great questions.
We don't mess around.
Don't mess around. You're keeping me on my toes this morning. It's a good thing I did my listening. That's a great question. It's one I'm not sure that I can answer, to be candid. But let me take a shot at that.
Okay.
So what does it mean to be responsible and to persevere? So perseverance, we're looking at how do we stay committed and diligent in our endeavors. Whatever those might be, and responsibility is, a personal, social responsibility to do the right thing in my mind. So I'm going to work from that foundation. So from the responsibility aspect, cognitively, it's important that the individual can process information well enough to understand what it is to be responsible. So that is actually a component of sequential processing. So engaging in cognitive exercises that improve something called digit span, which is a measurement of working memory or sequential processing, can in fact help us to be more responsible. Because when we can process information sufficiently, we're able to understand what it is that we're doing, the cause and effect of our actions and the long-term implications of them. So responsibility is something that we see that develops in normal human development as we gain life experience and as the brain matures over time, and responsibility becomes something that we, gained through neurological development and life experience, and that can be facilitated through cognitive training. Brain Builder would be something that could be useful for that. In terms of perseverance, I think that's a more complex question. Perseverance requires our ability to have an open mindset, to be, open to what possibilities are, to be open to and flexible when circumstances come up that were unplanned and that we weren't ready for. So we need to be flexible. And so flexibility is a big component there. So flexibility training, and much of that has to deal with how do we approach adverse situations in our life and deal with those. And, experience is about all that we can do to help us with that. But the less stress that we have, the more perseverance we do tend to have. Those with depression have a difficulty with perseverance. So, that I know I didn't answer it very well, but we've just run on with some thoughts. So sorry, I couldn't be more helpful there, Erin.
Oh, no, I thought it was great. It's fascinating to me. I would have never thought to seek out something to make me more responsible. And I think it's a very interesting concept. Even the fact that we're talking about it is fascinating to me.
It's a great question. It's one I'm really going to be thinking on, and maybe I can research some more and we can revisit that at another time.
Sounds great. So we're down to our last three questions in this marathon. And I guess the next one will in basic regards for stroke survivors, what's out there for them? What should they be doing? And granted, I mean, that's a conversation they need to have with their personal physician, but in terms of cognitive training and programs, and especially with your offerings, what's available to them?
Well, the answer is much the same with respect to brain injury, mm-hmm. Because with stroke, we're dealing with brain injury specifically, that is having, you know, specific motoric impact, you know, on our functions. So when we're looking, you know, at a stroke, where is that stroke localized? You know, is it a right hemispheric stroke? Is it a left hemispheric stroke? To what degree is the impairment as a result of that? Again, in general, music-based programs can be very, very helpful in stroke rehabilitation. In fact, you know, I was thinking back when my grandfather was doing early stroke rehab, when not much was available, he would teach his patients to speak again through singing. So he would actually, you know, work with musical structures to help reorganize them in preparation for language. And many, many therapists take that approach today. So music can have an incredible influence on stroke patients. And I'm thinking of one. We have a case study on a woman we'll call Z, who at 54 had experienced her third stroke. And quite severe. And her speech pathologist used the listening program as part of her rehabilitation. And, you know, after three strokes, you know, we're looking at very, you know, very severe neurological insult. Right. And she had, you know, what was miraculous recovery. And we're not going to see that in every patient, but to look at her ability to handwrite, where she couldn't write any longer, she was able to write. She couldn't walk, but then was able to walk with a walker. Her ability to communicate drastically improved, and she was able to return to work. She was unemployed as a result of the second stroke she actually had. Then she had the insult with a third stroke. Mm. And as part of her rehabilitation with the music, she was actually able to return to work. So, you know, a very, you know, encouraging example of what can take place. Then, of course, brain training programs that are working on very discrete cognitive skills, such as memory training, can be very useful. But again, we must make sure that individual can, in fact, engage in it. And these can complement what is considered traditional rehabilitation through speech, occupational, and physical therapy. You know, most importantly, is looking at a comprehensive program, and then what specific discrete areas can be trained within that.
That is that's an amazing case study there. It's very inspiring. Okay, next question, autism, which is just a hot button in the community, and more specifically, some of the speech, lack of speech that comes along with certain cases of being on the spectrum.
Yeah, we need several hours to talk here.
I figured. Yeah.
A large body of what we do at Advanced Brain Technologies is working with professionals that are working with children and adults who have autism spectrum disorders. So when we say autism, that means a lot of things.
Right.
You know, autism is a spectrum disorder from minimal symptoms to very severe symptoms. Just like we as human beings are on a spectrum. Right, we're on a continuum of function.
Sure.
So I think that's an important thing to consider. Also to consider with autism, we tend to see people with these diagnoses to be highly intelligent. So we must first of all approach autism as understanding we have an incredibly intelligent individual who, for any number of reasons, and there does not appear to be a single cause for autism, but a compounding of factors of biology and environment that are impacting these symptoms, that there's an extraordinary potential and a potential for recovery. And I think that that's important to hold. There are so many treatment approaches that are out there, some more grounded and valid than others. There are targeted nutritional intervention programs that are, you know, very specific regimes that are developed to treat kids with autism. There are behavioral-based approaches. There are neurodevelopmental approaches. There's a whole host of offerings that are out there, and very difficult for a parent to filter all of these possibilities that are out there. So that would be the first statement. The second statement is the individual, again, has to be looked at, not the diagnosis that they have. And, you know, candidly, there are very few places that have that comprehensive, holistic perspective involved. We're very fortunate to work with a number of professionals here. The recommendation that I would make, and in full disclosure, I used to be executive director of this organization, and it is the organization that my father runs, called the National Association for Child Development. But in terms of a family receiving a comprehensive evaluation, a very specific targeted developmental program that they can do at home that will give them real results, I could not recommend them exploring that any higher. It isn't about one product or one program. It must be a very comprehensive, holistic approach, not only toward the child, but the family that has been impacted by these symptoms. So my recommendation would be to explore NACD and look for an individualized approach. There are professionals in many areas that are going to be extremely helpful in that, but in terms of a comprehensive approach, that's what I'd encourage them to look toward.
Now, does the National Association of Child Development have a website we could give out for those listening?
Yeah, the website is www.nacd.org, so okay. nacd.org. They have offices in Utah and branches throughout the country and some international branches for families to go to.
Great, thank you. All right, last question. Can certain music help with learning disorders? And if so, is the effect long-lasting, or does it end when the music ends?
So this is much like the question, is there or is there not a Mozart effect?
Yeah.
Right, yes. Been a big question since the mid-90s, you know, when Sean Rauscher did their, you know, research on an effect of spatial temporal reasoning playing a certain Mozart sonata, and found a 10-minute effect in response to that. So there was a short-lived effect in a very discrete area. Now, with that said, I will say there is a Mozart effect, there is a Haydn effect, there is a music effect. Music can absolutely help with learning disorders in a large range of cognitive-based issues. One of the fastest-growing areas of science is music neuroscience. Neuroscientists are studying the impact of music in a myriad of ways, and in fact are using music to understand how the brain functions, because it has influence on so many brain centers. So with all that said, going to specific learning disorders, we have done research and had research done on our programs that does in fact show that methods like the listening program can improve learning. And that is measured with standardized tests in academics to show that a specific music protocol engaged in over a particular period of time can in fact result in improvement in standardized testing. What's happening? Okay, to learn, we need to be able to listen. And much of learning involves what's called auditory processing, what the brain does with what it hears. And when the brain isn't understanding the information that we're reading and converting into language to understand what it is we're reading or what we're listening to in the classroom, the brain isn't getting the information that it needs to learn, remember what it's engaged in, and to act and respond to that information. So highly structured music can in fact help reorganize the brain, help it to better understand what it hears, and then see resultant learning improvement. A lot of learning issues are based in auditory processing issues that have been shown to be able to be remedied by music-based interventions. And the list, the results are lasting. When we are having research done on our programs, we always encourage the investigators, to do post-testing 6 to 12 months post-intervention. And what is found is not only are the gains maintained, but they actually continue to improve for a period of time up to a year post-intervention with the program. Yeah. And then once these new skills are learned, they do tend to be maintained. In terms of what people can do in the immediate, things like using Baroque music, recordings of Vivaldi, Corelli, and Haydn as an example, at a tempo range of 50 to 60 or 50 to 70 beats per minute during homework or learning activities is shown to enhance and improve learning. So Baroque music is something that people could use immediately to help with learning challenges and studying and homework.
And so, I use one of your CDs, again, that you sent me with the Brain Builder package, the Maximum Focus.
Right.
It's the green one.
And that is Baroque music, tempos of 50 to 70 beats per minute. Recorded specifically to help entrain an alpha brainwave state through the tempo and the structure of the music so that you can be highly focused and thus learn and be more present in the task that you're engaged in. Do you find it works for you?
That is my favorite one. I've talked about it on Facebook. I will tell you, I always call it my motivation on a disc. and I probably call it motivation when really what it is it's helping me to focus. But yeah, I can put it on and get my work done like there's no tomorrow. It made a difference immediately.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear it's been good for you.
Yeah. And that's the honest truth. I go to the green one. Well, good. Thank you so much for answering these questions and spending the morning with me and my listeners.
Erin, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
I want to mention again that everything we spoke about today, the listening program, Brain Builder, the Sound Health CDs, are offerings from Alex's company, Advanced Brain Technologies. And you can find more information, join the community at the website at advancedbrain.com. And we hope to have Alex back. He has a whole line of is a professional area too. And I know we have a lot of professionals in our community. So I'm hoping that after we get through the holidays, Alex will come back and go under another grilling of questions.
I'm very happy to, Erin. I welcome the opportunity.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. And once again, you can find our community at www.brainpages.net.